Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to Semaphore Uncut, a podcast for developers about building great products. In this new episode, Darko, the podcast host, welcomes Major League Hacking co-founder Jonathan Gottfried. Jonathan talks about the importance of education and community and how Major League Hacking is helping developers build successful careers. I hope you enjoy this new episode, and let's dive in.
Hello, folks. Welcome to a new episode of Semaphore Uncut. Today with us, we have John Gottfried. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Can you just please go ahead and introduce yourself briefly?
Totally. So I'm John. I'm one of the co-founders of Major League Hacking, which is the largest community of early career developers in the world.
Can you give us some pointers how people listening to this podcast can interact with your platform and learn more?
We have a lot of programs that people can participate in for free that help you build your real-world technical skills. So things like hackathons, workshops, conferences, all of the sort of extracurriculars that a developer needs to get ready for a career in the industry. If you're a professional who's already a little bit further along in your career, we have a lot of opportunities to get involved from a sponsorship perspective, where you can hire really talented developers, train them up on your platform if you have a developer API or platform, or even sort of help build a more niche skill set, like something like SRE, right? Which is not as common as software engineering. So a lot of different ways to get involved and support the next generation.
We have recently launched a CI/CD learning tool with shortcuts into everything you need to know to level up your CI/CD process and increase your productivity. Also, to ensure that all our customers get the best CI/CD guidance, we have improved our sign-up process. From now on, everyone who's considering using Semaphore will get personalized CI/CD expert guidance from day one. Our engineers have more than 10 years of experience, so you'll surely be in good hands. Check it out on our website, semaphoreci.com.
And perhaps I'm just curious, for people who are shifting their careers slightly, maybe going from being a developer to SRE, or, you know, from developer to DevOps, and is that also like audience that significant footprint in your work? Or
we definitely have a lot of people who are embarking on their second or third or even fourth career. We take a sort of path agnostic view to what a student is. It's not uncommon to see people who are in undergraduate computer science programs working alongside bootcamp students, working alongside people who are sort of teaching themselves on nights and weekends. We think that it's totally fine to group all of those people together, and they might be learning slightly different things. They might have slightly different paths, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're all trying to build a similar skill set.
Okay, now we are done with this basic introduction. So I'm really curious to learn a bit more about your career and how you ended up doing what you're doing right now.
I actually have a history degree, which is kind of funny. Was one of those kids who loved programming. I'm kind of part of the last generation that grew up without ubiquitous internet and technology, right? Like when I was a kid, I had dial-up. You know, our computers were fairly basic. They had floppy disks. And so in order to make it do anything interesting, you had to learn some level of programming, right? There was no apps that were just out of the box cool. And so for me, it was a means to an end, right? I was really interested in this technology and I wanted to make it do more. So I started teaching myself. But when I got to the college level, I realized that academic computer science was super different than the programming that I really knew and loved. I loved building things. I loved tinkering. I loved figuring it out. And I wasn't particularly interested in what made something the most efficient algorithm. And so I switched to history to become a teacher instead, because I loved working with young people. And through like a bizarre series of events, ended up getting dragged right back into technology by participating in a lot of community events in New York City when the tech scene here was kind of getting started. And that led me down the path to MLH very directly. But it's one of those things that the more people I talk to, the more common it is that people have these really sort of non-linear paths into the industry. And I think that's really cool.
In terms of your work and focus, can you give us a bit more about the timeline and how things, you know, have changed and shifted over time for you?
We started Major League Hacking about 10 years ago now. Over that period of time, we've worked with about 650,000 students. That's a pretty big chunk of, you know, the developers that are now in the industry. And we've seen a lot of different trends emerge, right? Like when we were starting out, things like React and Angular were pretty nascent. Right? Like web technologies looked super different. You know, we used to see a lot of people doing more like, I don't know, like PHP, right? Like things that are kind of traditional scripting languages rather than these more complex frameworks. That's been a major shift in technical trends. We've watched a lot of kind of like hype cycles come and go. People have been getting really excited about VR and then less excited. People have been really excited about Web3 and then that, you know, changes over time. I think that like anything in technology is sort of cyclical. And from our perspective, it's been really cool to watch that in real time through where people are spending their energy, you know, on learning. For us as a business though, we started out really thinking of ourselves as a hackathon company, and we over time realized more and more that we were actually an education company. And that's changed how we think about ourselves. It's changed how we serve our students. It's changed how we build our products. But, you know, we really believe that the type of experiential learning that we're able to sort of foster on campus is the key thing for a lot of people in, you know, getting their start and really becoming excellent technical contributors.
And when you're connecting to this 10 years in the industry, people coming through to the hackathons and to these, you know, curriculums that you guys have, how that crowd has changed? Do you see something that's interesting there?
I think the biggest change is that our community is significantly more diverse than it was when it started. That's been a really intentional effort by a lot of different people. Now it's something like 45% non-male, which is pretty impressive, right? And it's still significantly more diverse than any computer science classroom I've seen. So that's been a big focus. The other big focus is that it's much more global. We have a series of virtual events now, you know, after the pandemic, where you could be a developer in Arkansas collaborating with a developer in Bangalore, right? And that's a really cool opportunity, I think, for everyone involved to get more perspectives, build more interesting things, and ultimately like sort of like branch out from whatever their local community looks like. Beyond that, I do think that tech industry in general has started to shift towards a more holistic view of what makes a good developer or engineer. It's not just about getting a CS degree from MIT. Hirers and you know, people who are sort of like on that end of the industry are much more willing to consider non-traditional paths and look at someone's skills rather than just where they went to school. And I think that's really important.
For us, we haven't really, you know, shifted to a virtual event and all of that somehow. And we just rebooted that recently. So from the perspective of organizing events, engaging with people, meeting with people and all of that, I'm curious to hear the pros and cons, differences of this approach of virtual versus in-person.
When everyone was stuck at home, people were much more willing to try different formats of virtual events. And so there was certainly a momentary spike in interest in all kinds of virtual events. What we've seen as in-person activities have kind of gotten back to some amount of normal is that people are kind of desperate for in-person connections. It's really difficult to replicate the serendipity that you feel at a conference where you run into someone in the hallway that you met at a conference 5 years ago and you strike up a conversation. Doing that in a virtual context is really difficult because you don't like run into people in the same way. I also think that when you do a virtual conference specifically, people don't tend to have a lot of incentive to be part of it live. You might as well be putting up a bunch of YouTube videos, right? And that creates a lot of difficulties of whether or not it's worth it to even have a virtual conference or really it's just a series of recorded webinars. For us, the type of virtual event that's worked best are live synchronous events. And I know that's kind of counterintuitive, but like we do hackathons and we do a monthly conference called Global Hack Week, where there are live events and live interactions going on constantly. And that's the entire design of the event. Like, there's not really a ton of ways to participate asynchronously. And so you do see some of that community building, some of those discussions, some of the sort of like serendipity coming when people are all there together at the same time engaging with the event. But, you know, it's still, it's different. It's like noticeably different than an in-person event. It's not better or worse, but it is different. And I think people need to understand that, like, it's not going to be a one-to-one comparison.
I have just one example in that realm. We want to connect to a colleague that used to work with us. The guy lived, you know, at the very, very north of Poland. And we decided to fly over and, you know, spend, you know, a day and a half with the guy. At the end of that kind of second day, we were, you know, packing back and going home. And we were just, you know, talking how different the whole experience was. Because yes, you have that focused moment, like you and I are now talking and the timer is running. And once it's up, we are going to say a few more sentences, but then we are going to hang up. And that's it. However, with the in-person, okay, let's have a drink. Let's walk for half an hour to that place. Along the way, many different, you know, topics, you know, you see, you start talking about this, you start talking about that. That leads you back to your main work topic, where you rediscover something from a completely different angle that could have never happened in the virtual world.
Yep. It's less transactional.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's funny, like we use Discord really heavily for our virtual events, and Discord voice channels actually work really well for that kind of just rambling conversation, right? Because people could just have it on in the background while they're working and chatting about whatever, you know, it's not a scheduled meeting. And that makes a difference.
I'm curious about those, like, as you put them, that's a very correct technical term, synchronous events, where do you guys do like workshops, or those are like actually hackathons, or what's the format there that works the best?
Every weekend we have virtual hackathons, and it's a standard, you know, Friday to Sunday hackathon, right? Where it has a start time, it has an end time, and then people are working in between. Sometimes we do have workshops and presenters come in, but most of the time is dedicated to you and your team collaborating on a project. For Global Hack Week, it's much more workshop focused. So for that event, it lasts a week every month. They all have different themes. And typically we get somewhere on the order of 1,500 to 2,000 participants at each event who show up for things like workshops, tech talks, you know, career sessions, trying out new APIs. We structure it in terms of like short bite-sized like challenges and things to participate in. And those work really, really well. Like the incentive for someone to come do it live is that, you know, they can get live support and they can talk to the other participants. And sometimes it's a game that's going on live. And we found that to be really effective as like a format for virtual events.
We have recently launched a CICD learning tool with shortcuts into everything you need to know to level up your CICD process and increase your productivity. Also, to ensure that all our customers get the best CICD guidance, we've improved our signup process. From now on, everyone who's considering using Semaphore will get personalized CICD expert guidance from day one. Our engineers have more than 10 years of experience, so you'll surely be in good hands. Check it out on our website, semaphoreci.com.
If someone wants to join, is there a fee, or is there invite only, or they can just, you know, come in and join? Is there any criteria?
Yeah, for the developers, it's free. You know, whether it's an on-campus hackathon or a Global Hack Week or anything else, it's free for developers to participate in. And it's all funded by corporate partners. So companies that want to, you know, hire really great, you know, talented engineers, or companies who want to build more awareness and adoption of their developer platform. And that's really what makes all of our work possible. MLH is actually a public benefit corp. And so we have like a mission and sort of a purpose beyond, you know, just the financials.
We actually used to organize hackathons in the early days. It was usually in the beginning of the summer, and then we create a hackathon, and then that might end up, you know, progressing into an internship or, you know, something like that. So I'm curious, are you perhaps also helping companies organizing their own hackathons and, you know, facilitate the whole process and so on, or that's not?
We do occasionally do like professional consulting, but it's not our main focus. Our main focus is building campus chapters that put on their own events on an ongoing basis. And you're right, right? Like putting on a hackathon is a lot of work. to be honest, like part of the benefit of engaging with someone like MLH is that we have these pre-existing events, you know, they're going to be high quality and we can plug you into them in a lower cost, higher volume way without you having to like book a venue and a caterer and like all of those different logistical hassles. I mean, most of our partners don't even like travel to the events. Like we're actually running sort of programmatic campaigns for them at 50 events at a time where our staff are promoting them on an ongoing, like repeatable basis. And so it looks much more like a sort of like scaled up program than it does an event sponsorship or something like that.
In the realm of, as you said, that you rediscovered yourself as an education company, I'm curious if you can speak more about that and what people may be thinking about, like engaging, you know, and going through your process and curriculum and all of that, how that works in practice.
What we realized over time is that there's kind of a couple of primary benefits to the developers who participate in our events. One is that they find community. And what I mean by that is they meet a group of people with shared interests, with shared values, who can support them throughout their career, right? And that's incredibly important, right? It's your support network, it's your friends, it's, you know, your professional contacts. And so that's one thing, right? Like they build community and that is just invaluable. The second thing that we realized is that people learn a ton. The process of taking your own idea, scoping it out, building a working prototype with a group of collaborators is such a powerful, like, pressure cooker learning experience where you can go from being a novice at the beginning of a hackathon to feeling really confident and actually understanding how to go from abstract concept to real product in a really short period of time. And we found that people who participate in hackathons, like, they're more successful in their careers. They are often becoming founders. They're often becoming engineering managers. You know, they're often becoming early adopters of new platforms. And that kind of like learning environment is a thing that a lot of universities like wish they had, right? But students are creating it for themselves outside of class.
I find this like super interesting because I have a 8-year-old daughter and she's now entering, you know, math is becoming more challenging and all of that. And I was just researching, okay, how can I help you or how can I, you know, someone else can, you know, help her to make it interesting, but also engaging and all of that. And then I found out about a service I haven't dug really deeply so far, but it's called Synthesis. They put, I don't know exact number, but maybe, you know, 5 or 6 kids within the, you know, Zoom call virtual room without the actual, you know, teacher or tutor or anything like that. But there is just like a video game purposely built for them solving a puzzle, which includes a lot of math. And they're just being left alone and they're having fun and they're actually, you know, discovering areas of math that they wouldn't have discovered with a tutor because, you know.
Yes, it's less prescriptive. Funny enough, we actually matched some of our like fellows, we call them, with Synthesis. I think it was last year to contribute to some of their open source projects. So we know a bunch of the engineers there. It's a really cool concept, very like philosophically similar to how we think about the world.
We are one of those industries where every couple of years there is a hot new role and kind of everyone is maybe not walking towards it, but, you know, definitely talking about it. It was a DevOps like a couple of years ago, which evolved into, I would say, SRE. And you were also describing how the purely, you know, developer role is also evolving over time from make me the fastest possible, you know, algorithm, SQL query to, you know, have a more holistic view. What's the distribution between those roles and what's on the rise? What's going down? What's going up?
Most students are not familiar with the variety of technical roles out there. People know that you can become a software engineer. Maybe they know you can become a designer. Sometimes they're like, oh, front end versus back end. If you ask the majority of students, they've never heard of SRE. They probably haven't even heard of DevOps. And the same thing is true of a lot of other specializations. We've had some success building programs around that. So most of our hackathons are pretty like broad, like build whatever you want, you know, open-ended. But the fellowship program that I mentioned tends to be a little bit more focused. And we've been running a program for 3 years now with Meta and Google, where the idea is that we take a bunch of engineers who are pretty competent software engineers, and we teach them the systems side, so Linux systems, so that they can effectively like qualify for SRE or production engineering internships. And that's been really effective. And the funny thing about it is that like often people come into that program with like basically no understanding of what SRE is. And they come out the other end applying for and landing SRE or PE internships. And that's a really powerful transition. And for us, like it's like 3 months. And so it can totally transform someone's career. And I think that I'd like to see more, you know, kind of like specialized training programs like that in the field.
Can you give us some hints to maybe a general one and people who are interested in maybe what more diversity in terms of how they can engage with you guys? What would be some next steps for people?
For companies that want to engage, for one, you should email us. You know, I'm John at mlh.io. We also have a website, sponsored.mlh.io, where you can find more information. But, you know, sort of the summary of it is that we can put you in front of tens of thousands of very talented, diverse, early career engineers, and we can, you know, help them understand what it's like to work at your company, what cool problems you're solving, why they might want to apply there, even if you're not Google or Facebook. If you run a developer platform or API, big part of our programs is introducing students to real world tools. You know, it's great if you go apply for jobs and you know Java. It's even better if you understand Google Cloud, right? Or AWS. And we work with developer relations teams to scale their programs to reach tens of thousands of students without a lot of effort on your end, so that you can kind of have that grassroots awareness. And one of the crazy things we found after 10 years of doing this is that something like 35 to 40% of our alumni, so students who have graduated and gone into industry, have introduced a technology in production at work that they learned at a hackathon. And so these preferences are not just about what you use in a hackathon project. It's really about, you know, building lifelong affinity of a product that people can bring into their work environment when the need, you know, arises.
Thank you. It's a super interesting domain.
No, I love it. It's really, honestly, it's inspiring to like work with students every day. They have so much excitement and a lot of creativity.
Great. It was interesting talking to you. Good luck with MLH and thank you.
Thank you. Happy hacking.
What a great conversation. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something new. Make sure to subscribe to Semaphore Uncut on your podcast player of choice so that you don't miss our new episodes. And stay tuned.